okay, this coming Shabbos is going to be the Shabbos prior to Matan Torah. It's also going to be the Shabbos when we get to read Parshas Bamidbar. And Parshas Bamidbar begins in the Midbar, in the desert. Now, why wasn't the Torah given in Eretz Yisrael? And the Medrash suggests here that Hashem wanted us to know that the Torah applies everywhere, all the time. And additionally, the Medrash suggests that had the Torah been given in Eretz Yisrael, it would have been assumed that a particular Shevet would, so to speak, own the Torah. And by offering the Torah in the Midbar, it opened the Torah up to freedom from personal corruption from each of the Shvatim. That is to say, no Shevet would be able to say, well, I know better than you, because the Torah was given in my Chelek. Now, if that were the case, let the Torah be given in Yerushalayim. After all, Chazal tell us, Yerushalayim lo nischal kalu shvatim. So they say in the different names of the different members of the Soloveitchik family, Mori Verabi would quote Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal, they say it also in the name of Rav Chaim, they say it over in the name of the Brisker Rav. They all suggest that the concept of Yerushalayim lo nischal kalu shvatim means that for ownership issues, Yerushalayim is not owned by a particular Shevet, not by the actual Chalukah. There were places that were identified as being half in the Chelek of Yehuda and half in the Chelek of Binyamin. We know that the Mizbeach had to be Kulo Bechalko Shal Binyamin. So therefore, we mean as far as ownership is concerned, Yerushalayim lo nischal kalu shvatim. But for the actual division, there were two Shvatim that had leads. So Rav Shechter would quote the Netziv, who explained the Chazal, that Moshe Rabbeinu was given the Torah to keep. Chazal tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu was given the Torah to keep, but he was kind, right? And he shared it with Bnei Yisrael. So when did that possibility happen, if we take that Chazal at face value? So the Netziv suggests that it was when Be'er Moshe Satorah Hazos. It happened when the Torah tells us at the beginning of, I think it's Parshas of Hazos Abracha, right? Where we say Be'er Satorah Hazos. No, it's a little bit earlier in the Chumash, but in the Chumash Devarim. Now, the problem is that, you know, how could that be? We know that at that point they were in Eiver HaYarden, in somebody else's chelik. It was in the chelik of Reuven. So how could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu gave over the Torah at that period in time? The ownership would have been to the chelik and the tribe of Reuven. So then it answers that there was a period in time where there was a small piece of land that Reuven had rejected, and the Torah recognizes when it says Dan Guraye Yizanek Min HaBashan, that means that Dan hadn't risen up to claim that part of the land. So long as that was there, that short period of time between the time that Reuven renounced the ownership and Dan jumped up and took over the ownership, at that point, Moshe transferred the Torah at that period in time. The Torah continues and mentions that the Tur points out that we always read Parshas Bamidbar before Shavuos. And Chazal cite two reasons as to why that is. The first one is that one who studies Torah should make himself into a Midbar that everybody walks through. And the second reason why we read Torah, we read Parshas Bamidbar before Shavuos, is to tell us that Torah is free like the sand in the desert. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe Zatzal explained that when one studies Torah, he can only be successful if Nafshi Ka'afal HaKol Tiyah, if he makes himself like the dust. Only then can he argue Psachli Bi Besoras Echa. In other words, says the Lubavitcher Rebbe, this is an issue that concerns the Gavra, this concerns the individual. The idea of the Torah being free like the sand is more of a chetzer-related issue, says the Rebbe, that one needs to see Torah as ownerless, so that a person can realize he can be zocha simply by making a kinyan on Torah, thereby owning his chelik, his piece in the Torah. So these, said the Rebbe, are two critical factors in Torah. To properly have a Kabbalah Satorah, one needs to make the Torah his, and one needs to make the Torah his, not in normal situations, but by turning around and being batel to it. Okay. Then the Torah tells us that Bnei Yisrael are told, in Pasuk Nun Beis, we're told, Ish al machaneu, ish al diglo. That the Bnei Yisrael should encamp ish al machaneu, ish al diglo. And the question has to be asked: why do we identify the encampment as al machaneu, and then repeat it with al diglo? And by the way, we find the same thing in regard to the Zemiros when we make the declaration Kol mekade shvi karoy lo, kol shomer Shabbos kadas mechal lo. If somebody is mekade Shabbos appropriately, scharo arbe meod, he gets a lot of schar, ish al machaneu v'ish al diglo. So the question has to be raised, why do we have the dual interpretation? So the Shem HaNatov, Rabbi Bernard Weinberger Shalita, noted that the encampment process sets a person's role. One knows his place when he sees his flag. He's grounded and he can move forward with a life plan that's individual specific. But at the same time, one also needs the energy and inspiration to know that he has so much more that he can achieve in life. The flag flying overhead reminds a person that he should set his sights high above, like the flag that flies in the air, giving a person the means to strive, but a location to begin with. And Shabbos is similar, in that Isha Machanehu, if there's a grounding, it grounds us in time and place. But also Ishal Diglo, it gives us a transcendence over the world, that we have a bigger things in mind for ourselves and our relationship with Hashem when we start thinking about Shabbos Kodesh. So whether we're dealing with Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar, which has an independent message, or whether we're speaking about the Shabbos, both it grounds us in the present and it gives us a perspective to look and to strive for in the future. We're told in the immediate next pasuk, "V'halavim yachanu saviv lo amoed v'lo yeketzav al bnei Yisrael," that the Levim should camp around the Mishkan, right, and that there'll be no anger on the Jewish people. Now, the Ramban notes that this mitzvah applies even in the future in the Beis Hamikdash. It's as this serves as the message of the Mishmaros. In other words, that the Levim are going to guard outside of the Beis Hamikdash, the Kohanim on the inside, the Levim on the outside, and of course, the Gemara in Tamid spends a lot of time identifying what would happen if somebody would fall asleep while serving as guards. And Rav Nosson Meir Wachfogel, the late great Mashgiach in Lakewood, explained that this guarding even led to an episode where a guard fell asleep and was punished accordingly. So why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu need the guards? He's HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for crying out loud. So Rav Nosson Meir Zatzal explained that Hashem wanted to show His people that even a second of break from Devekas, from His chosen agents, caused a strain in the relationship, and that couldn't be allowed. Lo yeh ketzef al bnei Yisrael, when there is a Levi who's designated to serve his time, to do his thing, then there's no ketzef. But if he severs that card, that tie of Devekas, then all of a sudden there's a potential for anger, because there's a potential that shows at that moment that we're not seeking that relationship with God. Then the Torah tells us at the beginning of Perek Gimel, Ve'ela Todos Moshe V'Yaron. And Rashi tells us that this is a proof to the famous Maimar Chazal, that Kol HaMelamedes Ben Chaveru Torah, if somebody teaches his friends Torah, Ma'alala B'Kasav Kilu Yaldo, the Torah treats it as though he birthed him. And thus Aaron's children are considered Moshe's in these psukim. So Rav Volba Zatzal noted that in order for one to impact the Talmud positively, a person has to care for the Talmud the way that one cares for his own flesh and blood. And by the way, it follows that if one wants to gain from a mentor, one must trust that person like one trusts a mother or a father. In the same way that children don't question their parents too overtly when their parents say, it'll be good for you, a Rebbe has to be understood, a real Rebbe, one who is ma'ala lava kasav kilu yalado, has to have that type of relationship with his Talmidim. The Torah continues in the same perek, about four psukim later, telling us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Moshe, and he says, you should bring Vata Kravis Alevim. You're supposed to go ahead and bring the Levim closer, Vesher Suo, so that they should serve Aaron HaKohen. And the Rambam in Hilchos Klei HaMikdash in the third perek rules that Levim service is not up to a Levi's choice. Whether the Levi wants to serve or not, he's obligated to do so, and he's forced to perform the Mishmar, he's forced to perform the Avodah. So Rav Amital Zatzal explained that this coercion has a purpose and a function. That is to say, very often the inculcation of the concept of discipline and coercion in divine service is important. Through the command to the Levim, who symbolize the entire nation, the rest of the nation observes and learns the importance of the concept. We find that similar idea at Mamad Har Sinai, where we're told, Kaf Aleihem Har Kegiges, which, by the way, is balanced with the overt story of the Jewish response of Nasa v'Nishma. Either God forced them to accept the Torah, or there was a Nasa ben Ishma. Either the Levim want to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or they're forced. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim teaches that the mitzvahs can be explained only in a general sense, and that a person who seeks to understand the reason in the details in every one of the mitzvahs is a fool. So, if that's the case, we understand why that's true. If every detail of every mitzvah had a reason which we knew and understood, then the aspect of tzivui Hashem, of following the word of Hashem in the mitzvah, would be lost. An action that's performed for a reason and a purpose that is has seichel doesn't need a tzivui, doesn't need a commandment. And so, the correct balance involves fulfilling mitzvahs with a general understanding of their purpose, willingly, as well as the performance of all the details of the mitzvah, which helps us have these dual aspects, one of command and coercion, and one of choice to do the Ratzon Hashem. Okay. And we learned that from the Levim. We see that when they covered the Kelim, when it came to the Aron, they put a lav, a meseh, or a tachash, and then they would put on an or techeles, that when it came to the Aron, they put a piece of tchelis on top of the tachash. And why is it that when it comes to the Aron, the top cover is made out of tchelis, while with the other kelim, it would be okay to have just the tachash, the multicolored one? So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein Zatzal explained that the Aron represented the Torah, which was, and therefore it was covered with tchelis, because it was reminiscent of the Kisei HaKavod. Now, once that serves as a reminder to the people that the cornerstone of the Mishkan, and thus of life, is Yerushalayim, it's possible to consider the strengthening of life through the beauty which is symbolized by the other colors of the Tachash. So once we set the tone with the Tchelis, the color can flow through all the other Kelim as well. Finally, in the Haftorah, we read from Hosea, we read the following three stages: Ve'irastach li li'olam, Ve'irastach li b'tzedek u'mishpat v'chesed rachamim, Ve'irastach li be'emunah. Ve'irastach li li'olam, that you're bound to me forever, leads the Sfasemis to a tremendous question. After Erisin, Akala still lives in her father's house. So where's the idea of li'olam? Where's the idea of being forever? So the Sfasemis explains that the feelings of uniqueness and specialness that accompany the Erisin, that's what we hope stays forever. Rabbi Reisman Shalita, the great Rosh Hashiva of Torah Vedas, the Rav of Agudas Yisrael of Madison, he added that every year when it comes to Shavuos, we try to again to have the original excitement of Matan Torah. That the whole idea of staying up on Shavuos night is to have the excitement in which Klal Yisrael should have had at the first Matan Torah. That sense of excitement of what's coming and what's going to be. And even though it's hard to stay up, some people question whether it's kedai. It's kedai to make the statement of excitement of what's coming. It's an opportunity for us to show avas Hashem to the borei olam, and that sense comes when we say ve'irastach li olam, when we recognize that erisin is forever. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu bench us all with a wonderful Kabbalah Satorah and a Shabbat Shalom to all.